I'm John Krall. Today's No Limits is a show for beer lovers. We're going to talk about Hoosier beers, about the variety of state brews, and about how the state's brewers are going to mark Indiana's bicentennial. Those plans, to give you just a taste, include a new Indiana beer app and a new bicentennial. My guests are Rob Caputo, Executive Director of the Brewers of Indiana Guild, and Tristan Schmidt, Communications Director for the Guild. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about beer today on No Limits. I'm sure that's a subject that is dear to many hearts here. So we're going to talk all things Indiana beer specifically. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Rob Caputo, who is the Executive Director of the Brewers of Indiana Guild, and Tristan Schmidt, who is the Communications Director for the Guild. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's good to have you both here. So probably ought to talk first about what the Brewers of Indiana Guild is and who it comprises. Rob, you want to start us there?
Yeah, sure. The Brewers of Indiana Guild is a not-for-profit organization that was formed to basically represent, obviously, a growing industry now, but the brewers across the entire state, and that involves a host of things as part of our mission. Advocacy at the State House, obviously the beer law, if you will, promoting Indiana craft beer. Obviously, Tristan's involved with that as the communications person. We also are, just gone through this evolution as the industry has grown to look at, quality standards, that kind of thing. We've got a Brewers Conference coming up, so there's obviously some educational elements to that. So it's a pretty broad-based, focus for us as far as, a few years ago we had, 30 members, and now we're close to 120. So that the things that we need to focus in on have changed dramatically probably within the last 2 to 3 years. So it's always a challenge for us as the industry evolves. So we've got to evolve with it. So, Tristan, something to add to that from your perspective?
Let me ask real quickly, does the brewery belong or do individuals belong? When you say 120 members, because does that get to there are 120 breweries here in the
yes.
state?
Yes, yeah, okay. 120 breweries. And we've recently gone to an opt-in for members as it's grown, because we had a lot of folks out there that weren't participating as much. So we're trying to get some folks to get involved that maybe hadn't been involved, that would show up at a festival but maybe not get involved with some of our committees, that kind of thing. So we've got a committee structure. It's we're basically trying to get better interaction between the Guild, its members, and then looking at what we need to do as an organization to represent everyone fairly. We've got breweries that are doing maybe, 100 barrels a year, which is, 900 gallons, whatever. And then we've got 30 to 60,000 barrels happening out there. So everybody's got slightly different needs. And our goal is to try to understand where our focus needs to be at any given time, depending on what sector of our membership is having issues. So it's a challenge to try to balance between that broad base of membership. So,
And Tristan, could you give me an idea of as Rob has alluded to, you've got people who are doing really high volume and those who are doing very low volume. What are some of the tensions in trying to represent those two ends of the spectrum?
Well, when we polled our membership about a year ago, about 2/3 of them were brew pubs. So basically, small restaurants that also happen to sell brew and sell their own beer. And then on the other end of that spectrum, it actually, going back to the beginning of the Guild, John Hill of Broad Ripple Brew Pub founded the guild basically with some other guys who just started some of the first breweries.
How long ago was that?
25 years. Well, Brew Pub opened 25 years ago. The guild started in 2000.
And so, for it's 16 years old.
Yeah.
Then. Yeah.
And for a long time, it was basically a volunteer-driven effort where John and Blaine Stuckey of Mad Anthony, Greg Amigo of Lafayette Brewing Company, Jeff Meese of Bloomington Brewing Company, a lot of the kind of old guard were really instrumental in getting the guild to where it is today, and for that matter, getting the Indiana craft brewing scene where it is today. It's to the point where if you really have a vested interest in brewing, and you're, for example, a lot of successful homebrewers have won medals at the Indiana State Fair Brewers Cup and then gone on to start their own breweries professionally. So it's, like I said, a lot of the original guys were brew pub guys, but then you have, of course, people like Clay Robinson and Dave Cold of Sun King Brewing. That's kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, which is kind of the more industrial scale of manufacturing beer on a wide basically a wide scale and getting that beer out, not just to the restaurant that you might own, but far and wide beyond that to liquor stores and restaurants across the state.
That is one of the things that you've seen the evolution. Then they no longer really refer to them as microbreweries. It's much more about, which was a term that was in vogue 25, 30 years ago. It's now much more craft beer. We probably ought to, before we go too much further, talk about the definition of what we consider a craft beer. Rob?
Well, I think the biggest focus on that now is going to be this smaller scale, localized, product that is not mass produced, not made in large quantities, maybe not nationally distributed, although there are some craft breweries out there that are doing millions of barrels of beer. And that's something the Brewers Association wrestles with as far as who is considered craft and who is not. But it really comes back to that whole localized, smaller batch, a little bit more kind of artisan based as opposed to this gigantic elimination of batch-to-batch variation and maybe even some elimination of creativity. It's pretty much creates like a wide-open palette for people to be creative on a very small scale. So, you know, the craft part of it is really how much in touch are you with what you're doing? Are you sitting in a control room pushing a bunch of buttons with valves opening, or are you the one that's up there opening the valve? And you know, in my past, that was always the discussion. At what point do you lose some of that craft, even though you're still considered a craft beer? Because you're, you know, if you go to New Belgium, there's somebody in a control room. There's still a lot of that art, kind of artisan feel to it, but it is much more automated. So at what point, you know, physically do you consider it? And that's some of the things that we used to talk about when I was in a brewery situation. So it's kind of an odd definition depending on how you view it or where you sit within the industry as far as how you look at that.
I like your thoughts, and I should say to our listeners, we're talking about beer here today on No Limits, something that is close to all of our hearts. And if you would like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. We're going to talk a little bit in a bit about, obviously, the big plans you've got for 2016 and the bicentennial and all of that and these new developments. But I've always been curious about why, you know, I'm dating myself here, but when I was a young man, the choices one had in terms of drinking beer were relatively limited. You know, there were a couple of major, a few, maybe more than a couple, but two really dominant forces that defined kind of who you were if you wanted to drink beer. This explosion of sort of craft and, you know, to some ways individualized or almost idiosyncratic beer that's geared more toward personal taste, I think, as Rob said, to the palate, has been one of the more interesting phenomenons, I think, of the past quarter century or so. What do you think accounted for it? I want to hear both of your thoughts on that, but I'm going to start with Tristan.
Yeah, we were actually just talking about that right before the show started.
Because there wouldn't have been a Brewers Guild.
Yeah, that's very true. I think one big aspect is the whole local movement. So, as in the past couple of decades, we've gone to a real globalized culture in terms of commerce and culture, for that matter, arts and entertainment. I think there's been a little bit of a contraction recently for people of my age and younger especially, who they see the value in buying a product from their neighbor down the street or the person they just met in a restaurant last week. For me, that's a big driver of it. I used to live in Broad Ripple. I met John Hill. John Hill was throwing basically little parties for the Humane Society, where he would invite the Humane Society of Indianapolis to bring in dogs that were up for adoption to his brew pub at Broad Ripple Brew Pub. And I met John, and I saw that he was 100% invested in his community. And speaking from my personal perspective, I've seen that continue since I've actually been gainfully employed in the industry. There's just a lot of love for the people who are making products and sharing those with the local consumers.
Rob?
Well, I think, you know, yesterday was actually the homebrew legalization day. Mm-hmm. And that's when it became legal to homebrew again in most states, at least from a federal standpoint. And, so that's tied back to that prohibition thing. So, you know, at a certain point, I think with the legalization of homebrew and people starting to experiment in their house and then looking at what was available and also looking at brewing history where, you know, pre-prohibition, there were much the same as Europe's, you know, small breweries in a lot of towns and everybody had their local brewery. I think, you know, that helped at least open the door for people to kind of pursue, you know, kind of almost a full circle thing where we got back to, you know, like where we're at now at close to 4,200 breweries in this country. So, yeah, I think this is kind of a full circle thing. Once home brewing became legalized, you had people that were actually starting to experiment and say, well, why not, you know, make a go of this from a business perspective? And, you know, tied that in with local and a lot of the things that are going on right now and the generational changes of what people expect and the availability of information and ingredients. And, you know, I mean, 25 years ago, unless you had a store that provided homebrew ingredients or knew somebody who knew somebody who had a mail order, you know, could order mm-hmm. that, it was more difficult to do that. And I think because things are so readily available through the internet and information changes hands so quickly, I think that's accelerated a lot of this because these opportunities to get things to do this hobby at home and make it infinitely easier to not give up on it because the equipment is readily available. I think that is really helping with, you know, people experimenting and starting to say, well, okay, I can start a brewery, or if not, I can have my little home brewery and experiment with new flavors. So
why, I'm going to ask this both of you, and I'm pretending to be, but why is something that is locally brewed better than, say, a mass-produced product that is shipped from somewhere else? Rob, I'm going to start with you and then go to Tristan.
Well, I mean, some of this is, you know, what's your personal
taste?
Yeah. I mean, some of this just comes down to what do you personally believe in? What do you personally believe in as far as supporting your, you know, local businesses, that kind of thing? So some of this is kind of mental. And then some of this is, you know, are you somebody who has heard about something or likes to experiment or is not afraid to try new things? So I think, you know, a lot of this local thing is just, you know what, I don't have to, you know, drive to another state or go somewhere else. It's right here in my backyard. And if I'm adventurous enough, I can go out and try that. And fortunately, there are so many options now that it's easy to do. And I think having it more readily available and accessible makes that local thing that much, you know, better for everyone.
Tristan.
Well, I would, as many people would argue, local isn't necessarily better, but from a moral perspective, I think it's great to keep money in your community as much as possible. From a quality perspective, yeah, not every local beer that you can get in your neighborhood is as good as what some of the big breweries are making. But we are here as a guild to help those smaller breweries make sure their quality is on point so that if a new brewery opens up in someone's neighborhood and they aren't sure what craft beer is, we want to make sure that first exposure to it is just as good as what they can get from the real huge industrial scale mega breweries of the world.
So you're actually at some level, part of your function is to police the quality of the of the local brews?
Not to police the quality. That's a different topic for sure. But we provide educational resources. For example, our Craft Brewers Conference coming up in March. And then we're also working with Purdue on some lab efforts so breweries can send in their beer for testing. So we definitely do what we can to make sure that the quality of Indiana craft beer is all that it can be.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Indiana beers here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Rob Caputo, who's the Executive Director of the Brewers of Indiana Guild, and Tristan Schmid, who is the Communications Director for the Guild. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about Indiana beers in anticipation of some big events from the Brewers of Indiana Guild in 2016 that coincides with the state's bicentennial. My guests are Rob Caputo, who is the executive director of the Brewers of Indiana Guild, and Tristan Schmid, who is the communications director for the Guild. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Spencer did and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Spencer, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, my question is really more about education. You guys touched on this a little bit. But one of the questions that I have is I work for a brewery in southern Indiana, and something that we run up against a lot is an older generation of drinkers that believes that by drinking, you know, maybe something that's considered domestic or whatever else, that they're still, you know, kind of supporting, you know, an American beer or something like that. How can we help them to kind of come to the conclusion that drinking something from your neighbor down the street is even more of a, I don't want to say a patriotic gesture, but, you know, I guess what I'm saying is we have these older drinkers that they like to drink the domestic, and how do we bring them into the craft fold by encouraging them to drink something that's truly domestic?
Good question. Thanks very much for the call, Spencer. Thanks. Well, Rob, Tristan, either one of you.
I think from my personal perspective as a consumer and both professionally from that perspective as well, one of the best things that small breweries can do is do what I think Sun King is the best local example of this, is to create a beer that is very easy for the typical consumer that you mentioned to consume. So Sun King's flagship beer is their Sunlight Cream Ale, which is kind of modeled after a macro beer. And that's a very, very good example of a beer where if you bring in your uncle who's just used to drinking PBR or Miller High Life, and you say, hey, you want to try one of these craft beers that's brewed just down the street, Sun King's Cream Ale is a really good way to just kind of say, hey, you know, this tastes similar to what you're used to drinking, but it is also brewed by people who live in our neighborhood, and that money, rather than buying Budweiser and having some of that money actually go out of the country, that's staying right here in our community. So the short and sweet answer is basically to brew something that is very effective for the average palate.
Well, I think one of the challenges that we have is some of our members obviously have restaurants and choose to carry macro beer. So at a certain point, The Brewers of Indiana Guild can't tell you what to have on or not have on. But what happens is, as long as we continue from a membership standpoint to have folks that do offer one of the macro beers as part of the portfolio of beers, you're going to continue to enable people to not try, even if you do have an entry-level beer, that beer. So, you know, not understanding what the situation is with you, Spencer, that's something else. Is there something that enables somebody to not try that entry level product? I think that's the other aspect of this as we look at everybody's varying business models and their locations, because locations do dictate kind of you know, if you want to stay in business, we need to sell product.
How much of this, and I'm going to pick up on sort of synthesize Spencer's question, something Tristan said. When Tristan, you mentioned people of my generation, and Spencer kind of alluded to, you know, your father or your uncle, you know, someone of a previous. How much of this is a generational thing?
That's a very good question. I think less and less it's becoming a generational thing. So my grandfather and grandmother immigrated from Germany, and they had local breweries. Their families brewed. And so he actually introduced me. My first beer that wasn't the typical macro beer was a German Hefeweizen. And at the time, I'd never had anything like it. I thought it was incredible. And this was my mid-70s grandfather mm-hmm. introducing me to that. So he would absolutely love what's going on right now if he were still around. So I think it's perhaps less of a, and I'm just hypothesizing right here, but perhaps less of a generational thing and more of a regional thing, depending on if you live in a big city like Indianapolis. It's so easy to be exposed to breweries like Triton and Flat 12 and Sun King, whereas if you live in a more rural area, you might still be drinking PBR and think that's a relatively American product you're consuming.
Well, there is a, you know, we were talking during the break. You guys asked me if I drink craft beers, and I do. But I remember when I first, and I'm about to date myself again here, when I first started drinking beer, I had a fascination with drinking, you know, beers from other places and all of that. And the response often when I would do that with friends and other folks that I grew up with is, what, you can pour that in a cup and drink it with your pinky out? You know, you're a little too hoity-toity here. for words, that has changed over time. What accounts for that kind of change, Rob?
Well, I think you still see some of that. I mean, you look at what AB InBev is doing right now with their embracing macro thing, and they're basically saying exactly what you just said. I mean, they're trying to differentiate the two consumers. Mm-hmm. Back to the original question about, to me, generationally, there's a loyalty thing. There used to be far greater brand loyalty because there were fewer brands. Now, brand loyalty with this generation, you know, younger generation, that loyalty has gone out the window because there are just so many brands to choose from. You used to go to the cereal aisle, there were five cereals, now there's 500 cereals, you know, same basic thing. You know, so, but, you know, when you look at this, there has been kind of a sea change, despite what you may see on some advertising from the macros, with people not necessarily being frowned upon for trying something new. And part of the reason is because there are just so many things to try right now as things have become more global, as we communicate more and understand that there are more choices out there to try, whether that's craft beer, whether that's cheese, whether that's whatever. And having that accessibility, I think, is the thing that takes some of that pinky finger out of it, because, you know, here it is. You know, I can continue to eat sliced American cheese, or I can go get something I could never get before that I had once at some fancy restaurant, and now I can actually get that in the store. So, you know, just availability, I think, is eliminating some of that perception of this is, you know, something that's pinky finger. Hey, are you trying to show us up? Whatever that is amongst friends, you know, when everybody's wanting to make a joke or whatever. And you're not drinking it because it's a joke. You're drinking it because you enjoy it. And I think more people understand or respect people who, I may not like it because there's 100 different beer styles. Mm-hmm. I may not like an IPA, but, you know, I can appreciate that that's your favorite style and you won't catch me drinking that. But, you know, good for you. You know, that's your taste buds. You can't be all things to all people. So.
We're talking Indiana beers here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881 or send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. I want to pick up on the other part of Spencer's question, too, which was the education piece. You guys have got some fairly ambitious plans for this coming year. We ought to talk a little bit about that. Tristan.
Sure. Well, the most two recent efforts, which we actually just launched ahead of one of our three annual beer festivals, which took place last week, and that was Winterfest, are our app, which is available for both Android and Apple phones. It's just Google Drink Indiana Beer. You'll find our Drink Indiana Beer app. It has all of Indiana's 120 breweries in it. It has turn-by-turn maps to these breweries. You can favorite breweries. You can take notes. You can get in touch with the breweries directly through the app. And this is really driven the goal of this app is basically to promote the breweries, to get people to go to the breweries, to discover new breweries near their hometowns. If you live in Annapolis and you're going to Evansville for the first time, you might not know that they have several breweries down there. So we're really hoping to kind of expand the awareness of what's going on in Indiana craft beer, not just regionally in the central part of the state here, but statewide. Another aspect of this is this leads to the Bicentennial program, mm-hmm. which we launched at the same time. And this is basically a way to celebrate Indiana's 200th anniversary. The fact that brewing is bigger than ever in the state. And we're really trying to connect our local breweries with local providers of brewing ingredients. So we're working with hops farmers. We're working with maltsters. There's even some work going on at IU Bloomington with local yeast. So we're basically trying to get people who are involved in the industry, but in less of a forward-facing aspect like our brewers are, to work together with the brewers and get the brewers to work with those local providers to basically brew truly Indiana beers as much as possible.
And so there's not going to be one Bicentennial. There could be several.
Yeah, so basically we have a list of maltsters, hops farmers, and other ingredients providers that are based in Indiana. And we're providing that list to our brewers. We're encouraging them to basically make Indiana beer as much as possible. So whether that's using a local strain of yeast, using local hops, using local malt, if they can do that, then we'll definitely basically help them promote it. If they're just using one terrific version of hops, then we'll help them promote that as well. It's basically a way to get the word out about the fact that Indiana brewing, like I said, goes beyond just the beer. There's a whole industry behind getting that beer from the brewery to your bottle.
We are talking about Indiana beers here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say that I'm a delivery guy for a local brewery in Indianapolis, and this program is really interesting, and I think it's great that there's more business coming to Indiana, more jobs coming, and it's also great that people have more options to try different flavors and stuff. Just wanted to give a shout-out to all the local breweries and all the other beer delivery guys out there.
Thanks very much for the call and for the comment. You are actually allowed to mention who you deliver for if you want to.
Okay, well, I deliver for Sun King.
Okay, we've had him on the show before.
Cool.
So,
thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call, Andrew. So, and that raises another point, one that I've been remiss here. And I mean, how many, we talk about this as a local state industry. I mean, how many people all told are employed by this? Do we have any idea, Tristan?
Yeah, the Brewers Association, which is basically like the National Brewers Guild, we're a member of that. They do studies every couple of years to check out the economic impacts of brewing across the country. And according to their 2014 study in Indiana, in 2014, there was an economic impact of more than $1 billion in the state from Indiana brewing. And there were about 8,000 full-time employees in the industry. So, again, that's not just working at the breweries. That's people who work for distributors, who work at hops farms, who work in all realms associated with craft beer.
Gotten an email from a listener named Justin. If you want to reach out to us via email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Justin says, John, I see many brew pubs opening in Indiana, but few closing. Recently, the Three Pints Brew Pub in Martinsville closed. I wonder if your guests have any information about that closing. Thank you, Justin. Tristan, Rob, either one of you?
We don't know all the specifics. You know, whenever there's a closure, obviously there are business decisions made at a certain point by those who own the business. We don't have a host of information on that, but, you know, I do know that they had actually shut the brew pub in Plainfield down ahead of the actual production facility down in Martinsville. Not exactly sure what that is, but, you know, I do know as somebody who has started a brewery that there is a host of work and there is a host of time that is spent. And at a certain point, some of the challenges and some of that time just becomes overwhelming. And, you know, it very well could be that it was just too much. Like I say, I don't know specifically, but I can tell you that it can be all consuming as a business owner. And there are a host of things that happen when you don't expect them, just like any business. And, you know, I know how many hundreds of hours that I put in at a brewery startup and just maintaining that. So really, the time commitment, some of the things that you maybe didn't anticipate or, you know, maybe had rose-colored glasses on about the business just may have caught up. That would be a guess for me. I mean, obviously.
What's the hardest thing about doing it? You know, because it is one of those things you will hear people say sort of, you know, either they want to, you know, open a winery or they want to do a brewery and they think because you like to drink wine or you like to and you have a passion for it to drink beer that this would be something. But you're right. It is a business.
Well, yeah, it's a business. And obviously, you know, you've got to have the right people and they've got to have the right skill set. And you also have to have the money to hire people to do that. And when you start out, you don't necessarily have that. So, you know, there are a lot of things that may be in your sweet spot, out of your sweet spot, that may take more time because they're not in your sweet spot, where you thought you were only going to spend 10 hours a week and now it's 20 hours a week. And as you grow, if you don't have the resources to add staff, that falls upon you or your business partners or other people that are there. And there's a certain point where what you thought was going to be your dream life is now a nightmare.
Gotten a question from a listener named Abby who says, wants to know if there are any plans to organize any festivals for local Indiana breweries, either in connection with the Bicentennial or just in general. Tristan.
Yeah, well, Brewers of Indiana Guild holds three annual festivals. I mentioned Winterfest, which took place at the State Fairgrounds last weekend. That sold out for the second time 2 years in a row. Our next festival is coming up Saturday, April 9th in Bloomington at the historic Woolery Mill. That's Bloomington Craft Beer Festival. And then our third annual festival, Indiana Microbrewers Festival, takes place Saturday, July 30th, downtown at Military Park. And these three festivals are crucial for us as a guild because they directly support the legislative efforts, the promotional efforts like the app and the Bicentennial program that Brewers of Indiana Guild basically starts and runs for our breweries. And then we are looking at doing some smaller festivals at some point, too. As the industry has grown, our festivals have grown as well. For example, we sold 6,500 tickets to Winterfest, so it was a pretty sizable festival. But we are looking at doing some things that kind of harken back to our original days when John Hill at the Brew Pub was throwing his festival as what started out as a fundraiser for Humane Society of Indianapolis, and there were far, far fewer people and far fewer breweries. So we're doing what we can as a guild to keep up with the industry and represent our breweries to the fullest.
Well, and if you're looking for a totally local Indiana beer festival, there will be only Indiana breweries at the Bloomington Festival. That will be all Indiana breweries, nobody else. So just, you know, to answer that question from that standpoint, and we have had some discussions with some of the local farmers and growers about possibly helping facilitate something around the Bicentennial. It's kind of just in the talking phase right now, but we'll see what happens. So.
Is there a place that a URL or wherever that people can go to get information? And I'm presuming they have to buy tickets to the festival. Can you give them some idea what costs might be?
Yeah, so if you go to www.drinkin.beer, drinkin.beer, we have an events tab that has all of our events in it. Also, if you download the app, the Drink Indiana Beer app, we have an events listing in there that's not only our events, but also some of our brewers' anniversary parties and special bottle releases. And for tickets to our festivals, for $60, you can get in early bird admission, get in an hour before general admission. General admission tickets are $40, and then designated driver tickets are $10 a piece.
We are talking about Indiana beers here on No Limits. My guests are Rob Caputo, who is Executive Director of the Brewers of Indiana Guild, and Tristan Schmid, who is Communications Director for the Guild. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
It's 39 minutes past 1 o'clock. You're listening to No Limits on 90.1, made possible by your sustaining membership and by Lake City Bank, offering a variety of financial investment and trust services for individuals, businesses, and not-for-profit organizations through the Lake City Bank Wealth Advisory Group. More information at lakecitybank.com. And by the International School of Indiana and their open house for students age 3 through grade 3 on Thursday, February 4th, with an opportunity to learn more about IB education combined with language immersion programs in Spanish, French, and Mandarin. More at isind.org. And by the Indiana Repertory Theater, presenting The Mystery of Irma Vep, a mashup of a Gothic horror story coupled with a Victorian romance featuring an archaeologist, an Egyptian mummy, and more. Tickets at irtlive.com. Sign up for No Limits email topic alerts at wfyi.org/no limits.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krull, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Indiana beers today. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Rob Caputo, who is Executive Director of the Brewers of Indiana Guild, and Tristan Schmid, who is Communications Director for the Guild. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Ryan, who says, "Hi, John. In regards to locally sourced beer and the quality of the product, what is the outlook on locally grown hops for Indiana breweries? Research is being done at Purdue on which varieties of hops grows best in this climate zone, but has there been any use of local hops to date?"
Sure, I'll take that one.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I was actually on the Purdue committee for the Brewers Guild. So we actually have been working with Purdue for the last couple of years. And as Ryan mentioned, there's a research going on. There's also some research going on which barley varieties grow here, because that's a big challenge for the industry. As far as Indiana-grown hops, I know that a host of local breweries have used local hops. In fact, I think I've seen a couple of things recently. One of our breweries used some from Indy Highbines. There is an Indiana Hop Alliance, which is a group of all the hop growers that are trying to work similar to our guild to promote and work together to grow the industry here in the state. The malt thing's a little less developed than that, based on the lack of varieties that grow well here. But, yeah, really you need to check, and I would guess that as the bicentennial thing rolls out, we'd be checking in with the breweries and with our app to see who is doing a bicentennial and which hop farm they're using them from. I know in the past I had used some as well. I think, I don't know how many of our brewers have used local hops, but that is the most prevalent ingredient, base ingredient that goes in a beer. That's available locally here within the state as far as maturity of industry goes.
We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Jacob, and if you'd like to find us on Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Jacob says, "I would like to know if your guests lobby the state of Indiana to lighten up the liquor laws here and how these laws inhibit their growth." My guess is you're both going to want to take a swing at that one. So I'll start with Tristan and let Rob bat clean up.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that order. I've been getting asked a lot what we as a guild think of Sunday sales. And I mentioned earlier that the vast majority of our membership in Brewers of Indiana Guild are small brew pubs and small breweries. And to be quite honest, most of them enjoy the fact that for now, they're the only place you can get carry out alcohol on Sundays. So you go into any of our member breweries on Sundays, you can walk out with a growler or two filled with their local beer. So actually this year, we in terms of lobbying, we don't have a big agenda. We got a lot of good things passed for our breweries last year. And so this year is kind of an off year for us. We aren't really pushing for or against Sunday sales. Like I said, the majority of our brewers like the fact that they're the only place you can get beer on Sundays. But officially, our stance is representing all of our breweries. We don't have a stance for Sunday sales. So personally, again, I love the fact that I can just drive down 1.5 miles from my house to Fountain Square Brewing and get a couple growlers. You'll see people in the breweries on Sundays who might not typically go to their local craft breweries, except for the fact that that's the place where they can get beer on Sundays.
Rob?
Yeah, we do actually spend a significant amount of money at the State House, and obviously that's geared toward generally what impacts our industry or our membership. We actually do have a political action committee. And a percentage of ticket sales to festivals actually go to our PAC. We are actively involved. We do have a lobbyist at the State House. We do spend a lot of time in discussions on the side with a variety of different groups and organizations. When things that are kind of outside of our realm that may cross over into, say, the liquor lobby or distribution or whatever, we do try to sit down with those groups if we can to discuss the issues and try to bridge that gap. We're trying to be cooperative and a good partner because we understand that there are benefits for everyone, but we also want to make sure that we're not selling ourselves out and our members out as an organization. But there is a lot of activity, not so much as Tristan mentioned on the short session right here, but I anticipate this happening as we head into 2017, that there will be a lot more activity for us down at the State House. But we are very, very active. The last session, there was a lot of activity, and there were many of us that aren't traditionally in suits and ties that were down there. So if you ever want to see your favorite brewer, go to one of the committee sessions, and you'll actually see a fish out of water as far as the dress code goes.
Well, or at least out of beer. One or the other. What are the concerns you anticipate in 2017? And I probably should just do the for our listeners. Indiana's legislative process is set up in a two-part cycle. There is a budget year, which is always the year right after an election, the session, legislative session, and then the other, what are called the short sessions, deal with not as many money issues, but other kinds of issues. It sounds like your focus is more on the budget issue, which is a budget session, which would suggest that there's money involved too.
Well, I mean, not so much money. You know, there's as a lot of folks know, some of the laws that have been on the books for a long time here are maybe not as, you know, take Sunday sales, for instance, not maybe as contemporary as they should be. And those are some of the things that we look to change. There are some, you know, exceptions or some permitting or whatever that need to be corrected. And we're working on some corrections in the short session on some permitting issues. What I anticipate and what we've seen is there's been a push to have growler fills outside of breweries and liquor stores, that type of thing. So I anticipate that that's going to be something that we're going to have to get out in front of, and we've already started those discussions. I see that as being a big issue that's going to come up, and we're certainly going to have some dialogue to make sure that, you know, our membership is either on board or gives us some direction as far as what their feeling is, so that we can adequately communicate that to the folks that are pushing for that. So, you know, I see that as being a big one. We've also had, you know, one of our things, you know, along the money front would be being able to sell at farmers markets, that kind of thing. That's been something that's been kind of riding behind the increase in barrel limits and things the last few years. So we'll see. We've got some of our, as we've gone into the smaller towns, the farmers market thing has become a little bit more prevalent as we've gone away from the brew pub / distribution thing. So we'll see what happens going into the 2017 session. We've started some dialogue with some of the folks already outside of, you know, kind of behind the scenes. So we want to become, you know, part of the solution and not part of the problem. As most people know by following along what's gone on in the State House with some of the Sunday sales and happy hour laws, there's a lot of rhetoric going on both sides, and I understand that, but we're trying to avoid some of that and trying to come up with ways that we can all work together to make some of these things happen, as opposed to just everybody pointing fingers. So that's kind of the approach that we've been taking.
If you are just joining us, we're talking about Indiana beers here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by giving us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Marcus, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
One of the things that I wanted to mention, it's not current with what the direction went right now, but back to, just real quick, I tried a beer at a local brew house, and I liked it. It was a long time ago. And then I tried another one, well, not just two, but I tried another one at a different place, and I said, geez, this tastes really good, just like this other beer tastes at this other place. Well, the more I started to discover it, and then I did a little research online and realized, well, geez, it's the same brewmaster that used to work at the other place. And it's one of the things that I want to bring up. It's, I don't know if I'm using the word art properly there, but it's the talent or the experimentation of the individual brewmaster that's creating some of the success, I would say, to some of the local craft beers, or the not necessarily the brew house, but, you know, the brewmaster themselves giving that success. I mean, to the point where, hell, I went ahead and applied for a job at this place, and now, you know, I'm quite pleased, but it's the brewmaster that has that, my opinion, has that, I don't know if the word is art, but that knack of experimentation in a certain direction. It's my taste. I mean, my taste might not be someone else's, but I found myself following a brewmaster now, and that's the way kind of I'm searching out different craft brews to see who's working with this guy or who this guy has worked with. Just one of those things that's really cool about, you know, the last few years.
Thanks very much for the call and for sharing that insight, Marcos.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
So is that, is there kind of a star culture here, where you have brewmasters who develop followings like that? Tristan, you're nodding your head, so I'm going to throw it your way.
Yeah, there is. I wouldn't necessarily call it a star culture, but it's more like a family tree, and I've seen that referred to and actually diagrammed out as a family tree or a brewer's tree, if you will, in several local publications where basically one brewer starts out as a keg washer somewhere, and he works his way up, becomes a head brewer, and then he goes off and becomes a head brewer for another local brewery, and then a lot of these guys end up starting their own breweries. And Rob, I'm sure you can speak to that as well, because that's a pretty common thing around here.
Yeah, and I think some of this comes down to, you've got the person that is the primary brewer, and then is training another person to, you know, operate similarly. I can tell you, you know, being in breweries, all the equipment is kind of the same, but there are differences and quirks to every system, you know, depending on the facility and what have you. So having somebody that can bounce from one brewery to another and has that skill set to execute the same way, despite the fact that this equipment may be a little different than this, or this system was built by a different manufacturer, it's interesting. And having that, you know, we talked about education previously, there is a lot of this kind of internal educational thing going on from brewer to brewer to brewer. And then, you know, we as a guild try to tap into some of that when we do our brewers conference and try to get education. We try to get panel discussions with the people that have the knowledge in certain areas, so that we, you know, aside from just having one brewmaster to another brewmaster from a brewery, we can actually get that to more of our members, you know, from that standpoint.
Doug, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, yeah, I just had a question regarding other microbreweries that have sprouted up all across the states, and my sister-in-law, for one, is with one that's now in that USA Today poll that they're taking votes on, and they're Wellworks Brewery out of Greeley, Colorado. And I know they partner with a couple other breweries, one being in Germany, for one, and I didn't know if there's a movement to partner up and have, like, sister cities, sister breweries, and other locations in the states.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Doug.
All right.
Tristan or Rob, either one.
Well, I think most of what we're seeing here in the state right now is just these collaboration brews, and I think you're going to see more of those from the with this bicentennial program this year. I think there's going to be more collaborative things. I know that a lot of what we've got going on has basically been localized, and, you know, we've discussed, you know, how long does the Brewers Guild and how long do we focus on the local market here as we grow that before we start looking at expanding outside of the state borders. And I think we still have a long way to go based on market share and some of the other data points that we're looking at as far as the state goes. You know, we are still a ways behind several of the big brewing states. And, you know, so I think you're going to see more and more of that. I know Sun King does a lot of collaborations around the country. And I think you'll see more and more of that. I know Toyard did the same thing on their Oatmaha beer with one of the brewery out there in Colorado. So, yeah, I think you're going to see more and more of that as the industry grows. But I would say right now, most of the collaborative efforts are going to happen within the state. And I think you're going to see a lot more of those with this bicentennial thing. And that's kind of what we're encouraging, not just brewer to brewer, but brewer to supplier to the other the folks that support our industry.
Got a Facebook question from a listener named Neil, and if you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Neil's throwing this this one your way, Rob says, I'd like to know where Rob is brewing now.
I am doing some consulting work on the weekends down in Tell City, Indiana. We actually first festival for the guys down there. They were pretty excited. But I am on the weekends brewing down in Tell City, Indiana, trying to get the brewery up and running down there. And I've got some folks I'm training down there on the equipment. So it took a while to get the equipment up and running, but we're brewing down there.
You're brewing, and the beer is available now?
Only at the restaurant down there.
Okay, so you have to drive all the way down to Tell
City.
Yeah, so
if you, anybody wants to ride in the back of my truck, it's a three-hour trip. I'll be heading down Friday evening.
And then when do you come back Sunday night?
Yeah, Sunday night, and then I'm here during the week and then back down there on the weekends. It's been a rough schedule, but I'm enjoying it. I like what I'm doing.
It really is kind of a busman's holiday for
yeah.
you.
Yes. But, yeah, there's plenty of room in my truck, so if anybody wants to hop a ride.
What drew you into being a brewer?
You know, I started home brewing just like so many folks. I homebrewed for about 15 years, and it, you know, determined that it was my passion, and, you know, just like so many folks, and, you know, decided to give it a go at a certain point and understood the risk and reward based on where I was at in my life. And, you know, again, there's, you know, the business becomes this, how much of it's all-encompassing and how much of it's not, and are you mentally able to handle that, you know? And at a certain point, you either commit to it or you don't. There's more than just committing to your passion. There's a host of business things that you need to focus in on as well. So it's kind of, you know, again, you know, back to one of the earlier questions, it's just, did you understand that when you went in, and how long are you going to stick with it at a certain point?
And I'm not going to ask you to pick a favorite beer, because that's sort of like asking you to pick a favorite child, and I get all of that. But could each of you list maybe five different kinds of undiscovered beers, beers that don't get enough attention here in the States, since you've got a microphone and a fairly big audience here?
Sure.
Tristan.
Well, right now, 'tis the season for me for Russian Imperial Stouts. These are typically high alcohol content, high flavor, typically sweeter beers that a number of breweries around here, for example, Flat 12 does one. Ironwood Brewing out of Valparaiso, a very small brewery, they do a great RIS. I'm a big fan of that right now. Also, black IPAs like Upland's Komodo Dragonfly, that's a pretty phenomenal beer that I've really enjoyed recently.
I also like the black IPA / American black ale / Cascadian dark, whatever you want to call it. I'm a big fan of hops, and I'm a big fan of dark beer, so I like an American stout, which is a hoppier stout. I'm all about that. And actually, I've kind of gotten into the Pilsner lager / I mean, if you can execute something like that, and, you know, and everybody gets down on the macro breweries, but they do a great job of executing a very delicate beer continuously and consistently. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that I focus on. I usually go in and get the lightest beer, despite the fact that it may not be my favorite style, just to see the delicacy of the beer and whether the brewmaster can handle it.
And Tristan, real quickly, throw out the URL one more time where people go to find more information.
www.drinkin.beer, drinkin.beer.
And I think that will have to be the last word. Other than this is a quote that I have always heard attributed to Ben Franklin, and it is, beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy. I'd like to thank my guest, Rob Caputo, and Tristan Schmidt of the Brewers of Indiana Guild. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.